You're listening to 90.3 Near FM. It's Northside today, Johnny here, and that was Prefab's Brout with King of Rock and Roll. Now, a million people are on waiting lists for acute hospital appointments, according to the Irish Hospital Consultants Association. They also say that 20% of consultant posts are vacant over pay and retention. And I'm now joined by Dr. Laura Durkin to tell us more about it. Good afternoon, Laura, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Johnny. So, the patients of Ireland have come to accept huge challenges in accessing care. And we're now at a point where the waiting lists, when we put them all together, approach 1 million people. And I think it's also fair to say we're getting to a point where we, the patients and the politicians, are becoming immune to the story that each one of those represents. You know, these are sick patients. They're sick enough that their GP has referred them for specialist care. They're members of my family, members of your family, and they're worried. Their families are worried. You know, often these people can't work while they wait. And somehow we've accepted this. We've normalised it. And it's not acceptable. And I think we have to acknowledge that these lists arise as a result of massively understaffed teams. As you said there, we've, 20% of our posts are unfilled, but we also have 40% fewer consultants than the than what is the average in the OECD. And the OECD is a group of countries, but it includes Chile, Hungary, Greece. It's not the holy grail of medical care by any means.
Yeah.
And if you look closer to our own neighbours, so Scotland, I think we'd all acknowledge the Scots are pretty similar to ourselves. And Scotland has double the number of specialists that we have, and they have a third more beds in their hospital system. We know, Johnny, that patients, once they access service in Ireland, have a good experience. So when they feedback to us, they feedback positively. And we also know that we do a good job across loads of chronic diseases and loads of cancers. We know that we have a highly skilled medical workforce who are internationally trained and highly sought after. But the truth is that at the moment, we don't have enough of them. And we're not yet clever enough to clone the ones that we have. So we really are in a position where, until we get the staffing numbers up, the waiting list will continue to exponentially rise.
Yeah, so you're saying that the root cause of the excessive long waiting list, the knock-on effect from our consultant doctors and nurses retention crisis.
Yeah, so. I suppose, and you know, Johnny, I don't want to, I sound now like a real negative Nelly, and I don't want to be, because I think there are very easy solutions to these problems. I work in Beaumont, so my personal experience with these issues relates to my experience there, where we have an engaged, positive, patient-focused management structure. And there's really a group of highly engaged consultants and many new recruits. So the impact of staffing the team has really been demonstrated clearly to me in my own specialty and also across others in rheumatology, or in medicine. So take, for example, orthopaedics. So orthopaedics in Beaumont a year ago had hundreds of patients waiting longer than 18 months to get into clinic. But now they brought in a physio triage service, and they brought in 1.5 new orthopaedic surgeons. And they've seen that there's now nobody waiting longer than 18 months. They've got their wait list way down and they're ploughing through the patients. Like, take respiratory. So last year, the chest guys had nearly 300 people waiting longer than 18 months in my own hospital. They added a new respiratory consultant to the service, and that number is now down at less than 60 and continues to decline. The waiting list for the general respiratory clinic is less than 6 months. This is at target, you know. In my own specialty in rheumatology now, I'm not banging my own drum, because my colleagues obviously do a lot of work as well. We went from a waiting list of 3.5 years to a scenario where we're now the only unit in the country under 6 months. And that's just literally the result of going from 2 rheumatologists to 3 rheumatologists. And, you know, we're the only centre nationally meeting our targets, which were set out in our own model of care. So really, once you, I suppose, staff the team, once you get bumped in chairs, once you get senior clinical decision makers in post, the waiting lists will follow. And I suppose, you know, one of the other things that we need to look at as a country is the fact that at the moment we're exporting a huge amount of specialist knowledge. You know, we train so many doctors and we do a great job. But the truth is that at the moment we're training them and they're leaving. And they leave to go to centres of excellence in America, centres of excellence in Australia. For example, I was at, I did some of my training in Johns Hopkins, and there were Irish consultants, trained Irish consultants in post across multiple different specialties. They were making a huge difference to Johns Hopkins. They were making a huge difference to their specialty. And meanwhile, at home in Ireland, our waiting lists continue to expand and expand. And we import doctors from other countries where they're actually needed. I hope that, you know, I think the solutions to the problems that we see on a waiting list, for our waiting list, are really straightforward. And, you know, I really hope, Johnny, that the HSE and the Department of Health can recognise that health is an asset. It's not a big black hole. And that by weighing in with us, that we can make a huge difference to both the waitlist and also to the general, like, to healthcare in Ireland. But I think the first thing that we need to do, we need the politicians to do, is to staff the team.
Yes. So to address the retention crisis of our, you know, consultants, doctors and nurses, what in your opinion needs to be done?
So I think first thing we need to do is acknowledge that we're an understaffed service. And then we need to look at how we can work with people. So work with the HSE, work with the politicians to engage on the specific waiting list. There are black holes on the waiting list, specialties where people wait years and years to be seen. And they need to be identified. Those services need to be staffed. And we need to be specific and engaged in the way in which we approach this. I think we've demonstrated through our local examples that it's really not rocket science. You just need to get senior clinical decision makers in post to see the patients, and the waiting list will come down.
Right. And would it be true to say that the exceptional waiting lists are also due to shortage of our hospital beds as well?
Definitely. And that's a whole, I suppose, these are most, so the 500, so the 1 million does include people who are waiting for admission to the hospital. But the outpatient waiting list is about 600,000 of that. And certainly, if you look at the deficits that we have, they're both at a consultant level and also at a capacity level. Those numbers for Scotland, for example, we are a third fewer beds. We do have a huge issue with the number of beds that we have and with the fact that we're almost at 100% occupancy all year round. You know, this is what feeds into the trolley crisis and definitely is the second string to the bow in fixing health in Ireland.
Right. OK. It came out at the National IHCA conference that the staffing crisis is also set to have serious impact on the National Children's Hospital, also National Cancer Care Programme, National Maternity Strategy, National Mental Health Plan, and also the major initiatives in neurology. What do you think of that?
Pressing, doesn't it?
Yeah,
so certainly,
it does.
With regard to the National Children's Hospital, as part of the model of care for the National Children's Hospital, there was an urgent care centre opened recently in Blanchardstown. So the idea of the urgent care centre, Johnny, is that people who have, you know, sick kids who aren't sick enough to need hospital admission, but sick enough to need to see a specialist would present to these centres. So, you know, things like fractures, you know, fevers that need a little bit more looking after, you know, kids that you wouldn't anticipate admitting to the hospital but do need to see a specialist. The original plan was that this would be open until midnight because we know that lots and lots of sick kids present in the evenings. And lots of people end up looking for care in the evenings because that's when their parents aren't at work. Unfortunately, we failed to recruit enough paediatric emergency consultants to actually staff that. And at the moment, it's operated at vastly reduced hours at 9 to 5, which is already a kind of a failure in the delivery of the model of care for the children's hospital. And this is a very small part of the children's hospital model. So it's a huge concern that given we can't staff phase one, that once it comes to the big project, the huge hospital on the Connolly site, given how things stand at the moment, we're going to have huge difficulties with getting the specialists home to staff what is the biggest capital expenditure we've ever made. And I suppose the real kind of reflection is, you know, you can have a beautiful building, you can have a fabulous hospital, but without specialists and without excellence in the clinical decision making, you still just have a building. And, you know, we really need to look at what we need to do to attract home our specialists because we trained them and now we just need to get them back.
Yeah, so in other words, what you're saying is it's not about the amount of funding available, it's about more about how the money is spent, really, at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So at the moment, we spend a huge amount in health. And at the moment, we're spending vast amounts, 67 million increases per annum are what we're spending on providing locum cover, so plugging holes in the system. And this is money that we would argue this is money that is being wasted. It's money that should be invested in getting permanent consultants into post so that they can develop the services and deliver the excellent care that the people of Ireland deserve.
Yes. And what's your view, Laura, about stress and burnout among hospital staff in contrast between work conditions here and overseas?
So definitely there are huge differences. We saw at our conference, we spoke with a couple of people who were working as doctors in Australia, for example. And there are huge differences in terms of the work culture that we see in the other centres. You know, we'll never have the sun like Sydney But we should be able to provide for a work environment where everyone is appreciated and safe and is providing excellent care without taking their own health into jeopardy, you know.
Yes. Is it true, Laura, that the new paediatric urgent care centre in Connolly Hospital, should I say, has no lab facilities and operations? So the blood samples, they have to be taken by taxi from Blanchardstown to Temple Street for analysis. Would that be right?
That is correct at present, yes. There's no laboratory at that site.
Not good. Okay. So, Laura, tell us about the Aussie flu in our southern hemisphere that could actually hit Ireland and how serious this all could be for us.
So, the way things work generally with the flu is that in the southern hemisphere, when they have their winter, they get the viruses that we will then get. They cycle up to the northern hemisphere for our winter. So if you look to the southern hemisphere, generally speaking, we can predict the viruses and the patterns that will emerge in the northern hemisphere. It's kind of like a mirror image of each other, if you know what I mean. And over the last couple of years, we have gotten off relatively lightly from the perspective of flu. But I'm sure you can remember some years ago, there were very nasty strains of influenza that led to, you know, filling up our ICUs and led to a scenario where lots of young and old people actually died from flu. There's a strain similar to that is what we saw in Australia through their winter. And I think we can anticipate that this is the flu that will hit us in Ireland. Now, it's yet to come, but it's particularly concerning in a scenario where flu is yet to hit, but we're already at maximum capacity in our hospitals. So it would be pretty unprecedented that come September, before the respiratory viruses really kick off and before we get flu, that we're already at a situation where, you know, the hospitals are full to the brim, people are out on trolleys. It really is a worry for the coming months in terms of the capacity, given the severity of the strain that's coming our way.
Yeah. So how do you see this whole situation panning out, Laura, with Budget 2020 on the way now? Are you confident in any way for a positive outcome towards, you know, a solution to the crisis, the whole crisis?
I suppose there's a couple of things that we have to consider. The first thing I think is it's important that we change the narrative around health spend to health investment. You know, the health of the nation is the only asset that we really have in Ireland. And certainly all of our health is the only thing that we have to cling to. So I think the first thing that we have to acknowledge is that although health is expensive, it is really the only thing that we have. So it is an investment in our wellness, an investment in our future and an investment in our children's future. So I think that we need to kind of get that message through to the people in the Department of Finance. But although I appreciate that health is a massive headache for them, for everybody else, it's all that they have. You know, looking to the future, we have to assume that things can only get better. We have to assume that once they staff the team and start getting the lists down, once they put in the beds in the capital plan, that things can only start to improve. But the truth is, Johnny, that to do that, we need them to engage with the frontline clinical staff. And we need to be able to build a service from now that we can be proud of. I think that may take some years for that to happen. So I can't tell you exactly what this winter would look like, but we have to be hopeful that future winters and that things can only get better from here.
Right, so we leave it at that, Laura, unless, of course, there's anything else you'd like to add before we finish up.
No, right. Thank you, Johnny.
No, you're most welcome. Laura, thanks again for joining us and all the very best to you. Best of luck with everything and take care of yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, that was Dr. Laura Durkin, consultant. She was talking about how the number of patients on Irish hospital waiting list has now risen to 1 million.